So again, thinking of, in particular, those of you who haven't been to one of these kind of days before, just to explain a little bit about what will happen next. So I'll give a talk for perhaps half an hour, 40 minutes or so, and then we can have a chance for some questions and answers and discussion on the talk or any other comments that you want to make. And then after that, we'll have a time for some tea, which will be nice. So it's quite nice to have a time at the end that will be a little bit more informal as well. So I really encourage you to make use of that. So we'll do that a bit later. So it's just nice to know what's happening, isn't it? Because those of us who've been to many of these, we're in an advantage. So we know what's going on. And just in terms of these talks as well, you can actually, there's a kind of art in listening to a talk, because in some ways these are delightfully, I was going to say old-fashioned, I'm trying to think of a different term, but we're used to these days a lot of kind of visual imagery, something very fast-moving, a few visual aids, PowerPoints, handouts, questions and all that kind of stuff. It's quite rare, I think, in our culture these days to listen to somebody talking for half an hour, 40 minutes, and just to be there, just to be present, just to listen. But it seems to me to be a very important part of this tradition, actually, because it's also about cultivating that sense of mindful listening, that the listening too is a kind of meditation. So you can be listening to my words, but also present with your body, present with your breath. And again, with that attitude of just seeing what is helpful for you. So sometimes, again, we can have a kind of program to say, well, which bits do I agree with, which bits do I not agree with, you know, arguments for this, arguments against that, and a kind of more intellectual way of listening and analysing can kick in. Whereas ideally these talks are given as a kind of offering, so they're like a free gift, really, in that sense. So to the best of my ability in this case, I just share something that I find useful and find helpful. And then so you can approach it in that same attitude. Whatever's useful, whatever's helpful, you go, yeah, that's good. And whatever isn't helpful, you can just put to one side. So I wanted to explore a little bit more of this theme of a path of joy. So again, beginning by sensing what we mean by joy in this particular context. And to me it's something about a more natural sense of well-being that we can kind of realize, discover, rest in, and deepen in. That isn't so dependent on getting things around us just in the right way. So it's a more joyful, easeful way of being that we can in some ways remember, in some ways recognize, in some ways kind of deepen it. So it's quite a different kind of approach to the habits that we might have, that we're going to make ourselves feel okay or make everything feel all right by organizing different things. And we can get very, very involved in that I need to have exactly the right kind of situation at home, I need to have the right kind of situation at work, the right friends, the right sort of collection of experiences, the right possessions, whatever it is. So we can feel that life then becomes quite complicated because it's a project of putting all these things together. And once we've put them all together, we've got to somehow keep them going. And it can be really quite tiring and quite frustrating to approach life in that way. And there can be built into that way of being a sense of struggle, because it's like we're always trying to get it right, we're always trying to sort of put all these things in place, and there can be the feeling that we'll get it together, but it's just round the corner. That feeling that we're nearly there, this is all right, that's in place. And, just when I finish this project, or just when I've done this, or just when that changes, or just when this changes, then everything will be okay. And I think this practice in many ways is about waking up to the endless nature of that kind of project making, the endless nature of thinking, just this, just this, just this, and then. So as we begin to let go of that, we can begin to touch into and deepen into this sense of a more natural sense of joy that is not so dependent on things being a particular way. So that's what we're practicing today. We can be have this sense of connection, sense of ease, when particular sounds are present, when they're absent. We can be present when we feel tired, when we feel sleepy, when the mind is busy. We can be present when we feel bright, the mind is calm. So in a way, that's what we're really developing and cultivating on a day like today, is to be with more and more all of the different things that come and go, and touch into this sense of joy. So there are various things that can be a kind of hindrance to this, or obstacles to this sense of joy that I can explore. And we'll explore. I mean, I always like to sort of hesitate when I have this word obstacle or hindrance, because it sounds like, that's something quite heavy, that's something quite solid. Yeah, I've got loads of those. And then, of course, we think, and then now I've got to get rid of all these things that are in the way of joy. So, again, already holding that quite lightly, that language of obstacle or hindrance, these are, in many ways, patterns that we can see into, be aware of, and work with, rather than something very heavy and solid that we need to get into a battle with. So already just having that as a way to think through these things. So one of the obstacles to a sense of joy can be when we find ourselves very caught in patterns of judgment. And that judgment can be very often towards others, or can be towards ourselves. And we can see how this is very difficult to touch into that sense of ease, a sense of peace, when we're full of a sense of how somebody else should be, what they've done that they shouldn't have done, how they need to sort themselves out, how we can't possibly bear to be around them. And then, of course, when that turns inwards on ourselves too. And this is such a strong feature for so many of us. I mean, you can go to whole days, whole retreats on this theme of judgment and of a kind of inner critic that we have. And it's so easy to do that, and so easy to turn meditative practice into another thing where we're constantly having a sense of how well am I doing. So we might do that with, you know, we're with the breath, and we're with the breath for three breaths. And then we go, and then the kind of judging aspect of us thinks, great, this is my chance to come in. What are you doing? Only three breaths, that's not good enough. And then so you sort of feel a bit beaten up, and then kind of go back to the breathing. Or we might do that around ethics and precepts. So I began today with talking about ethical precepts. And these, again, are a real training. These are something we can use to cultivate well-being for ourselves and for others. But noticing, too, when a sense of judgment can come in and be so harsh with ourselves, so harsh with ourselves. So we may have a commitment to meaningful, true, and kind speech. But then what happens when we find that we've wandered off that, and, you know, we got caught in a bit of gossip, or caught in some kind of speech that is perhaps not so wholesome? You can see, it's like a big stick that comes down and says, failed again, you know. Or can there be this half smile of the Buddha, a half smile of it, almost begins to just notice these patterns of the mind that are there, they've been around a long time, and we can work with them, we can be with them. But the approaches are all with a sense of warmth and kindness. And that doesn't mean that there can be quite a strong sense of, yeah, you know, this was a wholesome way to behave, or an unwholesome way to behave, and a determination to act in particular ways. But without the sense of, you know, the big stick. So this sense of judgment can be around for us as one of the obstacles to a sense of joy. And so the comparing mind, how am I doing compared to other people? Am I good enough? And I'm not sure really, but I do wonder if this is sometimes particularly strong in this culture. You know, a culture where there's so much emphasis on achievement and success and doing things the right way, and, you know, being good enough, having to somehow constantly prove ourselves all the time. And when that's around, then obviously there's a sense of comparison that can come in. So again, we can certainly do that on a day like today. You may have had in one of your more sleepy or pain in the knee or busy mind moments, you may have opened your eyes and looked around, and then you see someone else looking up. And then the comparing mind comes in. Oh, how well they're doing. You know, I'm not doing so well. I'm not doing as well as that. Or it might be another time when you can, you know, you actually feel like, yeah, I'm really getting into it, and I'm into the walking, and how this is what they're talking about. I'm really feeling that. And then you notice out of the corner of your eye somebody who's, you know, not doing the walking practice and, I don't know, checking their phone or looking kind of agitated. And there might be the feeling, ah, oh, you know, I'm doing better than them. And that can come up. And the Buddha's so interesting about this sense of comparison. He says that there's a struggle in thinking that we're better than others. There's struggle in thinking we're worse than others. And interestingly, too, there's a struggle in thinking that we're the same. You might think, well, if I'm not better and worse, I must be the same. But I think that's pointing to the whole sort of construction of being someone who's judged in particular ways, who has a particular status, who's failing or succeeding, or who's doing well or not doing well. But the whole thing is somehow kind of created and defended through patterns of thought, patterns of speech, through believing in certain things. So, again, this is one of the real joys in meditation, is to see when all of that arises, it's not that we have to get rid of it. That's, again, when we get into the idea that the comparing mind is a big obstacle that I've got and I need to deal with and I need to defeat. But rather to see, ah, these are patterns. Come and go. There's the comparing mind. There's the judging mind. Oh, you know, now I think I'm the bee's knees. Now I think I'm hopeless. But of course, with the smile, we don't really believe it. We don't really believe it. And that's so helpful. It's so helpful not to believe the stories and patterns that buzz around the mind. Now, we know, don't we, what it feels like to believe I'm hopeless. I'm always hopeless. This is it. The worst meditator in the world. You know, whatever it is. If you really believe it, really believe it, it feels so stuck. Yeah. And I remember some times, very difficult times in my life, and when I sort of felt very strong feelings of, feeling very, very kind of sad and down in a very stuck way. And I was really fortunate that my stepmom at the time, who was around at the time, was able to have this awareness. She was able to be, and sometimes it is helpful with others, that there's just a little bit of space around it. It might feel like that. It might seem like that. But is that the whole picture? Or is there a little bit of space? Is there a little bit of space? You know, that it won't always be like this. It won't always feel like this. This story is, in the end of the day, just a story. And it will pass. It too will pass. It too will pass. And to me, this is, again, a real benefit of practice, that we're cultivating. It's like we have our own inner friend, if you like, or our own inner counselor, our own inner sense of being able to witness in a non-judgmental way whatever's here, so we can feel that it can come and go. And so we're so much less caught in these things, this comparing mind, okay? Which again doesn't mean it's never going to arise. We need to stop it arising, and we need to, you know. But we smile at it. We don't believe it. We see it for what it is. Again, another obstacle to a sense of joy can be when we're caught in very fixed views of others, which may even harden into certain prejudices, certain views about who's okay, which groups are okay, which groups are not okay, which people we like, which people we don't like, those people who are like us, those who aren't like us. And it feels a real responsibility, I think, as someone teaching meditation and teaching meditation from within the Buddhist tradition, just to feel how on the one hand it's so helpful to feel connected to a tradition, and I like to really honour that. You know, this is where these teachings come from. There's a whole tradition of that. At the same time, without hardening into an identity that creates other people as something different, whether it's people of another religion, people of another tradition, people who don't practice at all, people who don't, you know, don't believe anything, whatever that means, I don't know. But we can see, can't we, how easily a spiritual practice or a religious practice can become a way of an identity that divides. And sadly so strong in our world. But we can see again how, and again this is something the Dalai Lama always says that I find so helpful, that just to see other people as these beings that wish to be happy, the beings that don't wish to suffer, a being that's been born, a being that will die. I mean, these are the basic realities of how we can see and relate to other people, rather than the sense of, yeah, my group, your group. And a sense of envy too is one of the things that can block this natural sense of joy, kind of relating to others through what's it like when someone else has some good news and what do we feel like. And I feel it's so helpful just to acknowledge it's actually quite natural for the sense of, what about me? Why didn't it happen to me? It's quite natural for that to arise. So rather than sort of demonising that, and, it's come up again, you know, I'm not making any progress. But it's just what happens. I think it's just what comes up for people. I don't know if you ever watch this program Peep Show. I don't know if it's appropriate. I actually really quite like it, but I never quite know if it's appropriate to mention it in Dharma Talks. It may not be seen as the most wholesome thing, but nevertheless, it's I really like it for a number of reasons. And one is because you hear the internal dialogue of the characters, so you hear what they're thinking. And there's a lovely point where Jeremy says to Mark, if you know the characters, he says, Mark, there's only so much happiness in the world, and they've got it. And that means we haven't got it. And then Mark sort of puts on his best front and says, Jeremy, that's not how happiness works, you know, pretending to be all wise. And then you hear his own internal dialogue and says, it totally is. So you can see how it's strong, and again how we might have the sense that, yeah, I don't think happiness works like that. Happiness is not a kind of fixed commodity that you've got it, I haven't got it, and there's only so much thing we can battle. But I like the sense, he says it, but then, yeah, actually, he really thinks. That's what he really thinks. So, again, for all of us to feel that we can sort of know or understand things perhaps on different levels, we can kind of know that, and then, yeah, we get caught in it, don't we? We get caught in it. So, working with that, I mean, one way that's so helpful is just to recognise it's painful. Recognize it's painful, and we can feel that. So in meditation, I think we've become more and more sensitive, is where it feeds into ethics, more and more sensitive to what produces harm and where we can let go of freedom. We can recognize it, even just that thought, how come he's got that, how come she's got that, that the thought creates a kind of, when we believe it, creates a kind of separation, and that separation is what's painful. There's a whole world born in that moment, which is that we see life basically as a competition, where we're all competing for a fixed amount of things, and we, you know, whether we're winning or losing. I guess something the Buddha says, in a battle, both the winners and the losers are the losers. I think he says it slightly more pertinently. It's something like that. So what is the way of seeing where the whole battle just falls away? The whole battle just falls away. And we can see this connection. So just to say a little more about working with these obstacles. Um, So there's a teaching which many people are using, which is very helpful. Now, I won't go into it in much detail today, but just to mention some of it, which is called RAIN, which means to recognize, accept, investigate, and non-identification. Recognize, accept, investigate, non-identification. But just applying it more particularly to these obstacles to joy, the thing about recognition is really helpful, because this is about knowing what's present when it's present. So when judgment is there, we can recognize as judgment. When the comparing mind arises, we can recognize that. When envy's around, we can recognize that. But it's very different to recognize from simply being lost in. So recognition is so important, because when we're lost in it, it tells us a story. It sets up a whole way of speaking, relating, a whole range of kind of activities that follow from that, you know. So when we're really caught in judgment, we feel, okay, what I really need to do is tell this person exactly what's wrong with them, and then that would be all right. But if we recognize that there's judgment present, then maybe there's some space to relate to that in a more skillful way, speak to them in a way that really helps, if we need to do that. Also, when we recognize that the comparing mind is present, again, we can begin to, comparing mind. We're not having to therefore buy into that and follow it and think, okay, I need to do more of this, or I need to cut them off because they're not so quick. So the acceptance part is interesting, because this is the bit that, again, sounds a bit counterintuitive. If we're saying they're obstacles, well, why don't I want to accept an obstacle? The logical mind says, oh, obstacle, I want to, you know, move it out of the way. And so we really feel time and time again in meditation that if we approach all of the things going on in that way, that this is a thing I need to push away, this is not acceptable, this is a thing that needs to be got rid of, it's simply leaves us spinning. It creates more complication. It creates more difficulty. It creates more struggle. You know? So you can be practicing meditation with the breath. Notice that there's a lot of judgment around, and then the mind might come in. I'm not supposed to be judging. That's an obstacle to joy. I remember him saying that. Right. Sort out this judgment now. But that's just more judgment to judgment. Yeah? So rather than that, we breathe with it. It's judgment. We notice, recognize, judgment's arisen. Breathe with it, be with it, feel it. You can feel it in the body, feel it in the belly. And as we breathe with our experience in that way, without the sense of this is not okay, things just pass through in their own time. It's just a pattern. It's not some terrible aspect of your personality or my personality that we need to sort out. It's just a pattern. And we can be with it, see it in that way. So the investigation part, one way of looking at that is that we begin to get curious about it. So rather than kind of seeing it as something very fixed and solid, we start to investigate. Well, what's that like? Where did it come from? What's triggered that? How does it feel in the body? What are the kind of conditions that support that? So we begin to bring a kind of questioning aspect to our experience. Yeah? And what does it feel like? And being curious about something, again, many teachers reflect on this these days, but really changes our relationship to it. Yeah? To bring a sense of curiosity to it can immediately make us feel less stuck with what's there. And the not-self, or the non-identification one, in many ways is the real heart of this practice. That we're relating to all of this changing experience in a very, very different way. Not relating to it as me and mine and myself. But we're beginning to see that there are these different flows of experience that are around, different patternings that we can work creatively with. But it's a very different sense from feeling that I am a particular kind of person. That's really where so much of the struggle in our life comes in. I'm a person full of judgment. Ah, that's the comparing mind, okay. And then you might have a sense, no, I'm a person full of comparison. Can you see that it's the I'm a person that bit that really adds to it? Here's judgment, here's comparison, here's envy. Being with it, breathing with it, feeling with it. It's a very different relationship to what's going on. So those are some of the obstacles to this sense of joy. Just again reflecting a little bit on some of the conditions that really allow it to flourish. I mentioned earlier this sense of appreciation. Appreciation is a real wonderful benefit in terms of cultivating a sense of joy in our lives. And what this does is begins to work against the kind of bias that we can tend to find, which is a bias towards the negative. And I think some researchers these days think that there was some kind of evolutionary advantage to that. That we needed to be kind of tuned in to what was wrong. We've got the sense we're in any situation, well, what's not okay here? Where's the threat? And you can see how that's quite helpful. Clearly, if you're in a threatening situation, to be tuned in to notice threats. And the people who were tuned in to notice the threats obviously did a little bit better than the people who weren't tuned in to noticing threats and just sitting in the corner and naturally, being with their breath. So there's something about that kind of, what's not okay? Who's out to get me? What's the problem here? That seemed to have perhaps a kind of advantage. But the difficulty for us is that it goes into a kind of overdrive. If it's running all the time, if it's running when there really aren't so many threats around, if it becomes chronic, that's when it can really, colour our lives. So to cultivate a sense of appreciation, which is very deliberately saying, well, what's okay? What's good? Like I was saying a little bit earlier, wasn't I? What's okay? What's here? What's present? Those kind of reflections can really bring a sense of joy. So I don't know if it sounds a strange reflection to you, but one thing I like to think about is that my legs are not broken. if I were to break my leg earlier today, that would be the main thing. People say, how did that day go? Oh, it was really good. Until I broke my leg on the way home. And I could imagine that might somehow dominate my experience. A sense of having a broken leg might be something that's kind of really troubling. So to turn my attention at the moment, I can appreciate that my legs are okay. I can really notice that. Have we, got enough to eat? There's a place where we can practice today. And we've got access to teachings, spiritual teachings, like no other generation. It's just extraordinary. Assuming you have access to the internet, which of course not everybody does, but if you do, again, you can just tune in, and it's just extraordinary when you think about it, how rich we are in some ways these days. It's just there, and you can, all of these wonderful traditions that you can explore and hear. Just amazing. So this is no other. You hear these stories in the Buddhist tradition about these guys and their, long journeys across the Himalayas to sort of hear a teaching, and these Zen practitioners or wannabe practitioners who couldn't get in the monastery and have to kind of chop off their arm in order to prove themselves worthy to get these teachings, and now we can just click, and it's wow. There's something to appreciate. And I don't just mean, that in particular, but it's just interesting what happens if you just turn your mind, if you just honestly do it as a practice, what can I appreciate? What is present for me? Who are the people in our lives that we might appreciate? Perhaps just having a moment to think who comes to mind. Who in my life can I appreciate? It might be a friend, might be a colleague, might be some kind of mentor, neighbor, or who's around. And just thinking of their good qualities, their wholesome qualities. And we can see as we do something like that, what effect does it have? Simply to bring those things to mind. Simply to bring it to mind. And I found that's at the 11 benefits of loving kindness, which I often speak about and think about. But I find for me, just thinking about loving kindness practice, just thinking about it can bring that sense of kindness and joy, which I find quite extraordinary. And then you can do the practice. But in a way, that's what it is, just bringing it to mind, bringing loving kindness to mind. You know, thinking of Thich Nhat Hanh, just you know, thinking of somebody like that, the Dalai Lama, Aung San Suu Kyi, Nelson Mandela, countless other people, but you're just thinking, just uplifting. So a sense of appreciation is there, and I really encourage you to do that as a practice. Be quite playful with that. Well, how much can you appreciate? What different directions might it go in? It can feel endless in a good way. You know, this word endless has different connotations. There's endless, like, never going to get to the end of it. There's endless, which means it's unfolding, it's boundless, limitless. So another quality that really brings the sense of joy is a sense of generosity, being open to others, a sense of giving. And again, there's so many ways in which we can do that. What's it like to really give our attention to another person? To really give our attention to another person. I found so many times in my own life, just noticing what effect that has on my own heart and mind when I can do that. Times of preoccupation, times of being a bit, you know, stuck in something that really shifts it is, well, you know, how are things for you? What's happening for you? So there's this strange, again, wonderful benefit of the practice, that by being more open to others, by reaching out to others, we find our own self-concern, which is very, can become a kind of prison. Self-preoccupation. And I don't mean by that self-care. You know, self-care is something quite different. Self-esteem is something quite different. But a sort of excessive preoccupation with how's it going for me? What's going on? Is this going to be okay? Is that okay? How can I do this? How can I do that? Ah, there's other people here. You know, it really takes us out of that sense of being generous. Contentment too. The sense of contentment is a quality which gives birth to joy. What is here? What is present? What's enough? So, the Buddha, you may know, the Buddha in his teaching talks about craving or tanha as the origin of suffering. And this is the sense that can feel like sometimes seen as an unquenchable thirst. An unquenchable thirst for some kind of sense experience or to be somebody special. A kind of unending sense of more and better and different and something else or somewhere else that can be around. And it can really leave us spinning. So you may notice again that arising in your experience today, and this is not to judge that, not to blame ourselves for that, but it's a practice of awareness, being mindful, noticing that. So did you feel at times today that there was a feeling of looking forward to the end of the day? That's almost always happens at times, you know, you might, particularly if it's difficult, there's a feeling of, it could be really nice at whatever time. Or you might have a feeling of wanting to be somewhere else, or wanting to be on holiday, that can come up, or missing somebody. Or in the silence can bring up, I really wish I could talk. This is great, but I'd like to talk. But it's that movement of the mind that wants. It's just going out to something. What's really going to do it for me? So when we cultivate contentment, when we think, what's enough? Another really good question. What's enough? You know, what's here? the advertising around us, you know, basically always says that there isn't enough, is there? There's something else that you need, which is this product. This is the thing that you need. So there are lots of messages like that. So it's quite helpful for us. I mean, I've sometimes wondered about playing with this. I think some people have actually explored this. These kind of anti-ads or something like that. I can't remember what they're called. But you've seen these sort of things. But you could have a sense of what would be the messages, what would be the images that would reinforce the feeling that maybe what you've got is okay. Maybe that's sufficient. It'd be lovely to see that on the billboard. Yeah. Just go past the billboard. It's a breathe, smile, let go. Yeah. So we can feel that too. Now, I guess I'd say just knowing that again, with something about compassion for ourselves, to notice how many things are around us might be pulling us in a different direction, pulling that in a different direction. When I came back from retreat once, I did the kind of practice in a supermarket, practice in a shop. It's again lovely ways that you can do, just to be a little bit more aware of what was happening and to notice how I was being pulled in. You know, three for two or two for three? No, whatever it is, I'm you know, three for the price of two. That would be it, wouldn't it? 50% off, and you know, buy one get one free. Just messages, so many things that are just they've subtly or not so subtly reinforcing the sense of you need more, you need more, you need more. So it's helpful when you are, you know, when right in the middle of our everyday lives, right when you're shopping, you know, this practice can be taken right into those environments. You can do the standing meditation, you know, when you're there. And I'm not suggesting, although it might be lovely, to hold 10 minutes and the bell. You know, you might be okay. I don't know what the shop would say. But you can do this kind of micro practices, literally just a few seconds to stop, be still. Yeah? You find yourself, you go in with your list and then you find yourself being pulled into other things. Just a little bit of walking meditation around the aisle. Let's see. Let's come back to yourself. So just again, to finally, this sense of joy, what cultivates this or what develops this? And there are lots and lots of qualities that we could reflect on. One thing I think is really helpful is to begin to reorient our lives around a sense of connection, yeah? Around a sense of connection, as opposed to the ordinary ups and downs. The ordinary ups and downs. So life always has ups and downs, and it always will do. There will always be pleasure and pain, and people who like you, and people who don't take to you, and people who think you're doing really good stuff, and people who don't. And it's just, that's kind of how it is. And it's very heartening for me to, when I reflect on the life of the Buddha, and this was true for the Buddha too, you know. Actually, people didn't approve of what he was doing and had other views and opinions and things. So that element is there. So if we're trying to create a life where it's all up, you know, it's all pleasure, it's all praise, it's all, you know, it's all wonderful, everything's no problems, everything's wonderful, then we're always going to be frustrated. So this isn't a source of real joy, lasting joy. It's like we're just wanting half of life. Yeah? So rather than kind of thinking of it like that, it's more of a thinking of it, to what extent are we connected with all of life, with whatever life brings? To what extent are we really in touch with it? And that is a very different kind of practice. And strange as it sounds, when we're in touch with that, even in the middle of something really tough, even in the middle of something really difficult, we can experience I might call it like the joy of connection. The joy of connection. Some friends of mine had a bereavement last week, and they were just sort of reflecting on the funeral and how you know, perhaps at the funeral, but I think for them particularly they were talking about the day afterwards, and they it was very clear to them that even in the middle of this loss, even in the middle of this bereavement, that they were closer. They were closer. They were more in touch with what mattered. They were more able to share good stories and to be brought together by this. And again, it's this sense, it's not that, you know, it's not a kind of happy occasion in the ordinary sense of the word, but it's an occasion for connection. Occasion for connection. So if we, again, I think it's very helpful in thinking about a path of joy to develop a sense, yeah, am I connected? Am I with what's happening? And the peace that comes from that, as opposed to, have I got a temporary up? Which of course leads to a temporary down and an up and a down and a spin. But can I be connected with whatever's happening? I think it's the real path of joy. Good. Okay, so let's just sit quietly for a couple of minutes together and then we can have some reflections and questions. Yeah.